All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Doc, focusing more on the metals, precious metals, and copper. Now we're going to shift our focus to the energy sector, oil, natural gas. We're chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the free report called Eye on Energy, where Joseph looks at the overall data for the oil and natural gas areas. Joseph, let's start off with the oil price. The oil price has been fading lower as we're recording this. It is slightly under $78 a barrel. Breaking that $80 level, while maybe not technical, is still psychological, I think, for some investors and for the sector. But broadly, I guess we can say the oil price is in a fairly tight range from what we've seen this whole year. What's driving this recent price decline, Joseph?
Well, we talked in the last month that I thought the price of oil was going to break 80 and break 75, and at some point we'd find a bottom after that. We're now trading, you know, we were 83 at the time, and now we're below 78. 77.30 is when I wrote the report this morning. Ion Energy will be available to people later today. And the index, the TSX Energy Index, was 288. It's now 283, so it's down 5 points on the week. And I think there's still another 40 points of downside, maybe, you know, so a 15% decline. We've come down maybe 7-8%. So we're not, about a third of the downside has been reached. And I think that with quarterly results from Q2 starting, I think we're going to see that the results are not going to be as buoyant as they were during Q1. Number one, the price of oil is not much better, but the real thing is the price of natural gas in Canadian dollar terms and for the U.S. companies in their market are much lower than they were in Q1. So I think we're going to see cash flows lower in many cases, except for companies that made acquisitions. So year-over-year comparisons will be positive. And I think that we're going to see that the ones with natural gas that didn't have good hedges, they're going to have disappointing results. And we'll see what the market does then. But I think with oil heading down, that really controls the market. And so if we break 78 and then we break 75 and you go down $2-3 chunks, each of those is going to have a negative impact on the price of the stocks. And my expectation is that over the next 4 to 6 weeks, we're going to see a buy zone after a pretty nasty market. And I think the general stock market is being brought down by the AI-related names. We're seeing NVIDIA getting hit, ASML. We're even seeing things like UPS get hit because the amount of parcels that they're delivering is down. Consumer spending is down. We're seeing it in the retail side. Airlines are talking about disappointing. We saw Air Canada in the Globe today. So there's lots of reasons for people to be looking for softer economy. Will we go into recession? I don't know. We've had two cuts now from the Bank of Canada. Housing is pretty rough in Canada. Retail sales has been pretty bad. So it's possible that we might go into a moderate recession in Canada. The U.S. is a little different. Yes, the consumer, which is 70% of their economy, is hurting. And we're seeing it from retail announcements left and right of weaker earnings. But remember, the American economy has massive deficit spending, most of it for military to help Ukraine and Taiwan and Israel because of the wars going around the world. So that's going to give the military industrial complex areas, those areas which are producing weapons, those areas will have a more buoyant economy. But if you're not, if you're in the green areas or normal, you know, Midwest manufacturing or whatever, those are going to be the ones that are going to be weak. So I'd be continuing to watch second quarter results across the board, be it banks, how much are they taking in loan losses and does that impact them? We saw Wells Fargo get hit pretty hard because the number was bigger and they missed on a lot of numbers. And we'll be watching right across the board once the Canadians start coming out. And again, I think the issue there is going to be, what do they say about consumer spending? What do they say about revenue loss? What do they say about accounts payable, accounts receivable? What are their debt loads? And I think that's going to be very critical. And if they come up with guidance that's negative, that will help to drive the stock market down to the levels that I've been talking about.
Yeah, Joseph, there sure are a lot of mixed currents as far as the economic data. A lot of things pointing to weakening data and economy slowing down, not just in the U.S. and Canada, but even globally. A lot of people pointing to China as another engine of growth in the economy that's slowing. But there's also been a narrative, and I'd love to get your thoughts to weigh in on it, Joseph, that some of the weakness in natural gas and oil prices have been the anticipated Trump trade, and that he would want to, and his administration would want to ramp up the drill baby drill campaign and really get more fracking going. But that seems to run counter to what energy companies would want, because they want profits. They want to buy back shares and pay dividends. So what do you make of the idea that there's going to be an increase in U.S. production when we're already at record highs in U.S. production?
Well, we're at 13.3 million, and you know, it's really the Permian that really did that, Eagle Ford, all those basins that have been very prolific, and new pipelines have come on and to bring that production on. And we're exporting a lot of it because it's light oil, and the refineries on the Gulf Coast are processing heavies. And that, of course, is a good advantage for us in Canada, which produce a lot of heavies. And that's going down to the Gulf Coast through the pipelines that we have down there. And then, of course, TMX is now taking heavier crudes to the west, and a lot of that's going to California. And then some of it gets retransported to larger ships and sent to Asia. But the ships that can come into the Vancouver Harbor are not big enough to really handle large cargoes.
Okay, well, Joseph, what about that Trump trade then? If it is drill, baby, drill, will that increase production? What sort of impact could the Trump trade have?
They need to have the economics in their favor. So they need to have more LNG exports so that they can produce more oil in the Permian, which then has natural gas as a byproduct, and then they'll have a place for that natural gas to go. So that's really a big important part. The other is they need the prices, overall cash flows to go up. Well, the only way that happens is volume growth and price growth. And the volume growth doesn't happen without the price growth. So the chatter by the politicians, you know, including the Republican Party, that the drill, baby, drill is going to mean lower prices for consumers is totally incongruent with what the energy companies need. They need more cash flows to justify spending more money and investing in the ground and bringing on more production, not less.
Yeah, I find it so interesting. We're talking about this record production, but we keep seeing drill counts, rig counts go lower. Is this environment sustainable in the U.S., Joseph, where drilling has just become so much more efficient? The wells that they're drilling just are longer. Everything about what seems like efficiency has gone in the favor of these producers. Is that going to stay that way?
Well, the industry, you know, because of the low prices, learned to do different things. They have stacked wells. So they have a footprint on the surface, which is small, and they can do 4, 5, 10 wells, 20 wells, 30 wells in some of the bigger cases off of one pad. And then they have different legs. So if you know, look at the Montney, we have 5 legs in the Montney. So companies are drilling into the 2 or 3 most prolific, but they're also doing wells into the others to show that they have the reserves and that they can always go and bring those other levels onto production at some point in the future. So, the same thing is occurring down in the States. There are multi-leg wells being done because of the different pay zones that are there. And so, again, it's an economics issue, but the industry has learned between longer wells, as you mentioned, 2, 3 miles, 5 miles is what they're doing, bigger fracks, more sand, higher pressure. All those things have been learned, directional drilling, all of that has been learned so that they can stay within the prolific zones and produce as much as they can. And the problem, of course, is the depletion rates are high with fracking and with long reach wells. So the companies have to keep on drilling, but they've been fortunately able to keep that 13.3 million barrels up. And remember, there's also the natural gas liquids. The data just came out on that today. So when we talk about the U.S. consuming, last week, or the data that came out today, the U.S. is consuming 21 million barrels, but the production for crude oil is 13.3, but the production from natural gas liquids and renewables is 9.3. So you add that up, and we've got 22.4 22.5 of production versus 21.0, which shows you that the U.S. is self-sufficient. And if the Trump administration comes in, then those numbers will probably go up and America will be a bigger exporter. But of course, the industry is going to want high prices to justify that new investment, because the pressure is on not only to replace declines and grow a little bit, but shareholders are also putting the pressure on them to a return on investment or return to shareholders. And then they're looking at the two options, of course, of dividends and NCIBs, as we've talked about many times in the past.
Yeah, Joseph, it's a weird tug of war that the companies have between keeping investors happy with share buybacks and paying dividends, but the pressure from policymakers or from some investors to see growth, and they've got to walk that fine line. Is there also a capacity issue in the U.S. or Canada where there's just a point where, due to pipelines or infrastructure, they can't really produce any more dry gas, or maybe they can't pump any more oil because there just isn't enough pipelines? Is that a concern for future growth as well?
Well, let's say Canada separate from the States. Canada, of course, we have TMX, so that's giving us growth for the next year or so in terms of moving heavies to the West Coast. Product won't go in as much because of the issues that we've had with the complaints by the buyers of the crude. So that's going to mean more heavies go that way. In terms of the coastal gas line, they can easily add in compression to, and of course, if there's a Train 2 announcement by LNG Canada, and then we have also Cedars and Rockies LNG, all of them are going to probably be moving gas through coastal and between expansion of a pumping station or putting in pumping stations or twinning the pipeline. Once it's in, that's easier to do. So in terms of natural gas going to the West Coast, that's going to be something we can handle. In terms of oil volumes going forward, maybe if there's a Trump administration, maybe the XL pipeline gets rejuvenated. Who knows?
Joseph, what about rate cuts too? Rate cuts seem to be in our future in the U.S. Canada just went through its second rate cut. What sort of impacts on oil, natural gas, or the underlying stocks do rate cuts have?
I think rate cuts are really not inconsequential because they really don't, in fact, impact the industry. I think psychologically it impacts mortgage renewals and also the government of Canada, which is, and many of the provinces are borrowing like drunken sailors. They're going to have a lower cost of funding. But for the individual, it's really going to be related to the benefit for mortgage renewals, because mortgages 5 years ago that are renewing now, remember we have a 5-year system in Canada, not the 30-year system in the States, that, you know, 5-6% is a big number in terms of change in amount of payments that people have to make on a monthly basis. And if they're tight in terms of their cash flows now, this will give them a little bit of a break. Well, this will be making it, the renewal will make it even tougher. Sorry, it's the other side. Going to the U.S. pipelines, there's going to be a lot more built there. And you look at Enbridge and the deals they're doing in the States. TC Energy is growing more. All the big American companies are talking about growing and putting on pipelines to bring the gas from the Permian in New Mexico and West Texas to the Gulf Coast. So, you know, because it's going to be a massive expansion of LNG. So I think the U.S., which has an easier approval process to bring on pipelines, especially in Texas, I think they're going to have the growth they need as the volumes come on.
Well, Joseph, we're getting ready to get into the Q2 earnings season, and there's a lot of companies that will be reporting. What kind of things will you be looking at when you dive into these earnings reports? Will it be profitability? Will it be their growth wedge? Will it be their hedging? What are the kind of things you're going to be looking for?
Well, first thing that I would be looking at is for those companies that have challenging balance sheets, have those improved or have they gotten worse because of the low natural gas prices? And then how close are they to the bank lines? And if they are getting close to the bank lines, that's a worry for us. Because if you remember a number of years ago, 5-6 years ago, we lost quite a few companies because the banks and the creditors wouldn't support them. So that's number one. Number two, I'd be watching the netbacks of the companies. What's their cost structure like? Are they growing their volumes? Anybody related to liquids-rich natural gas is probably going to be seeing some growth because of the premium price for condensate that's needed to move the heavy oil. But companies in the heavy oil like Clearwater, they have an advantage of TMX? How much of an advantage have they taken of that? How much growth did they have? the big problem is going to be in the dry gas producers. So even natural gas producers have some liquids, but if they only have 10 or 20% liquids and the majority of their production is natural gas, that's going to be a problem for them. And I would look at how their debt positions are and what the companies have done with hedging. And then 2025, the hedge opportunity looks pretty good. So we're looking to see if they can lock in $3 kind of numbers and have that recovery in 2025, while Q2, Q3 are going to be tough. And then Q4, hopefully we start seeing a bounce in the price of natural gas because of the Coastal Gas Line being taking gas for LNG Canada Train 1.
So on the hedging side of things, do you not want to see many hedges in place if you have a better outlook for next year? And if they do have hedges, hopefully they're at significantly higher numbers?
Yeah, the hedging has to be, you don't want hedging at a buck. You can't make money at a buck. Your cost structure is a $1.50, and we're right now trading around a buck. So it's a lost position without hedging. And so companies hope that they have enough liquid so that they're profitable on the liquid side, and they don't really care if they're losing money on the natural gas side. But for 2025, you want to be able to show the market that you've hedged sufficiently at high prices to protect your capital expenditure program so that you can grow 5 to 8% or whatever the number is that the board approves, and that you can cover any dividend issues that you have, with your monthly dividend, quarterly dividends that companies are paying, and that the CapEx programs are well covered based on the prices of the hedge book that they've got and the cash flows that they expect to come in. You want to leave some of it unhedged because, of course, if prices take off, you want to see that benefit, but you want to protect the downside of operational things where you don't have to say during the year we're cutting back spending like we've seen a number of companies do because of the low natural gas price. They don't want to bring on volumes when the economics don't justify it.
Well, Joseph, let's also talk about M&A in the sector, because we saw some pretty high-profile deals last year with both Exxon and Chevron. We saw a couple big mid-tier deals. We just were talking on the show recently about the Crescent Energy merger. There's been a lot of mergers in the past, but do you think this kind of environment will lead more companies to bolt on production or bolt on more fields through the acquisition front?
The difference is the bid and the ask. A lot of the ones who might want to sell realize that the commodity price for natural gas is going to go higher in the next few years as Cedars LNG, LNG Canada Train 1, LNG Canada Train 2 come on, Rockies comes on. So 2028, 2029, the value of gas in the ground is going to be worth a lot more than it is today. So do you really want to give that away unless somebody's willing to pay you for it? Right now, a lot of companies are trading under PDP, proved developed producing reserves, and at the top of markets, they get paid for the proven reserves that are not producing and probable, so they get paid for 2P. The gap between PDP and 2P could be 4 or 5 times. So why would you sell your stock at a 10, 20% premium now versus potentially a 3 or 4 bagger or more 5 years from now? And that's where I think the price gap between the buyers and the sellers is making transactions more difficult.
Joseph, is there a sector within the oil or natural gas stocks, a group of companies that you find is completely undervalued, one that even though you have some lower price targets for the underlying commodity, that you think that maybe the washout has already happened in some of these stocks?
Yeah, some of them would be natural gas related. That's number one. Number two, some of the service stocks are cheap because the activity levels are low. So people can start looking around at some of the frackers. The step is quite cheap versus where the high was. You've got opportunities in total. It was, 1085, now it's 922. Step was 482, it's now 431. You look at some of the natural gas players, and they're down quite a bit. I'll give you a couple examples. Paramount was trading at 33.80, now it's 29.80. You can look at, let me go here, to Crew was 661 at the high for the year, and now it's 398. There's a big one with a gap between them. Birchcliff was 868, it's now 608. So there's a lot of names that are sitting that are natural gas related. Pinecliff is 92 cents. It was $1.68 at the high. So, you could look at a lot of names that are trading much below their highs and be waiting to be buyers. when we get this dip. As I said, I think the 283 where we are today on the index for the S&P TSX Energy will go below 240. So that's, you want to wait for that to happen. You want to wait for the Dow to get down to below 36,000 from the 40,000 it is today. I think we could even maybe see 33,000 on the Dow. So I think the next month or two is going to be pretty negative for investing, putting more capital to work. I would husband your cash and wait for the next great buying opportunity. And we'll be reviewing all of the companies in our Q2 reports. So subscribers or people who want to subscribe can review the companies, get their buy lists together, and be ready to pounce once we get the shakeout. And as when we get these shakeouts, the market has got a lot of fear in it. Then people don't want to talk stocks. They're talking about how much money they've lost. And the reality is when people are panicking, that's when you want to be buying because the value perception, the value is there.
All right, so go enjoy summer, hey? Don't even bother investing in this sector. Wait for that washout, that fade to happen.
Yeah, build up your cash. You know, if you remember March, April 2020, it was gift time on the stock market. If you remember the first quarter of 2009, it was gift time, bargain basements, you know, in opportunity. So I think we're going to see a bargain opportunity. It may not be bargain basement like 2020. I don't think we're going to see those kinds of numbers. But we're going to see a correction of 20% or so in the sector. So from a high of 308 to below 240, that gives you that kind of number for the S&P TSX Energy Index. And getting below 70 on the WTI, I think, sets the case up for both oil and natural gas stocks to be bargains and be purchased.
Okay. Well, Joseph, I'm still going to follow up with you at the tail end of next month just to see if anything changes in that time. But you've laid out kind of a general time frame here of when investors should be buying, could be buying, when those opportunities could rear their heads, and right now build up that cash position. Joseph, thanks for taking time with us on this weekend show. Everyone, thanks for tuning in, taking time out of your weekend to listen to, again, another weekend show covering some of the moves in the metals and commodities sector. I hope you all enjoyed this weekend show. Please be sure to go through our website, podcast, and YouTube channel to listen to all of our daily editorials and company updates. Keep in touch with us and have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.